again. Talk to her friends. Work friends, college friends, neighborhood friends. You take her, I'll take Michelson. And we both take the buildings. I'll drop you at the college. You can start there while I take a pass at Michelson's residence. Then you take the York and First Avenue locations. I'll take 2nd and 3rd. Reinecke and Jenkinson started working east from Madison, so they should cover Madison, Park, and Lex. You start as far east as you can go without walking into the river. I can do that. If we're in the same vicinity, I'll pick you up. Otherwise, when you've covered the ground, head back to Central. We'll conference with Jenkinson and Reinecke. If any of us catches a break, we move on that. Okay. With a little sigh, Peabody looked up at the ugly sky. I'll take the subway from here. It's quicker than you driving me. Good. As Peabody walked back to street level, Eve got in the car, lifted out as she'd dropped in, and headed to 61st. Dr. Brent Michelson had lived well, Eve thought, when she used her master to access his dignified white brick building. Solid security, discreetly done, including the spotlessly clean stairwell as she took that to the 3rd floor rather than the elevator. She'd already ordered the electronics taken in and reviewed by EDD, but wanted a sense of his living space. A quiet hallway. Only one neighbor sharing the floor. Again, good security on his apartment, which she bypassed with her master. He had a spacious living area open to a small, neat kitchen, a dining area with a couple of never-lighted candles in a couple of chunky stands on the table. The furnishings struck her as masculine and simple, comfortable, without fuss. One long table held a forest of photos. His daughter, various ages, his daughter's family. Photos of Andy Spicker and, Eve surmised, Spicker's parents. Others of his staff, a lot with babies. Friendly, happy photos. In the kitchen, she checked his auto chef, refrigerator, cupboards. Nothing like food to give you a sense of how people lived, in her opinion. The man had a weakness for ice cream. The real deal. Preferred red wine, but otherwise ate healthy. His home office was as simply decorated and as quietly organized as the living space. As in his professional office, this also boasted a wall of photos. She imagined Michelson sitting at his desk, doing whatever doctors did at desks, and seeing that wall of life. Most of the babies, the really fresh ones, struck her as creepy. They either looked like fish or really pissed off alien life forms. But she imagined Michelson had taken great pride in knowing he'd been a part of bringing them into the world. He kept a small auto chef and a mini fridgey. Fizzy water, straight juice, and herbal teas in the fridgey. Fruit and veggie snacks in the AC. Not a candy bar, a caffeine source, or a bag of chips in the place. How did the man live? Not a problem now, she murmured, moving out to study his bedroom. Tall, padded headboard on a bed with a simple white duvet and a stack of sleeping pillows cased in navy blue. And books, she noted. Again, the real deal. Novels, easily 100 of them on built-in shelves or stacked on the nightstand. No sex toys, not in the nightstand. And no indication in the closet of a woman who stayed over and left a robe or any clothes behind for convenience. Nor a man, as a quick survey led her to think all the clothes were Michelson's. Suits, scrubs, casual clothes, gym clothes. And skates. He'd had 2 pair other than the ones he'd worn on his last day. She found male sex booster pills and condoms in his bathroom, so he'd had sex, or at least had prepared for the possibility. No illegals, Nothing out of the ordinary. She finished up in a well-appointed guest room and a shining clean powder room. When she left, her picture of Michelson was of a solid, dedicated doctor who had a genuine love of babies, kids, women in general. One who took care of himself, lived quietly, liked to skate, liked to read, and valued his circle of friends. Nowhere in that picture was a motive for murder. Back in the car, she headed east and considered Peabody's points. Elissa Wyman. Young, very attractive, graceful, apparently happy, well-adjusted. Not particularly interested in men or relationships, at least on the surface. But yeah, somebody might have been interested in her. Rebuffed, or simply not noticed. Or they might find, digging deeper, there were relationships or a lifestyle her family, her friends didn't know about. It had to be considered, just as Michelson had to be considered. The worst case had to be considered, too. Straight random. It hadn't mattered who. It wouldn't matter who the next time. It might have been a crappy day to hike the streets, but Eve pulled into an annoyingly overpriced lot, dumped the car, and hoofed it to the first building on her list. Street-level French restaurant, men's boutique, and a fancy-looking shop with lots of fancy-looking dust catchers. 3 floors of apartments above, all topped by a dance studio and a yoga studio, and those were capped by a rooftop that could be accessed by the residents and the studios. Rourke's program gave the roof the highest probability, with the yoga studio next in line. So Eve started at the top. The wind bit. The ice stung. But when Eve pulled field glasses out of her pocket, adjusted her position, she found an excellent view of the rink. A hell of a long way off. But a stronger scope? Yeah, she could see how it could be done. No sleet and ice the day before, she remembered. Not so much wind. Maybe part of the reason for the timing. Standing there, she put herself into the mind of the shooter. Might have to wait a while. A stool. Some sort of lightweight, retractable seat. Rest the weapon on the ledge that way. Keep everything steady. She crouched down, mimed sitting on a stool, her hands on an imaginary weapon, her eye on the scope. From that position, she took stock of neighboring buildings. No cover, she considered, and too many windows, too much risk of someone looking out. Lunatic or not, why take that kind of chance? Still, she took out micro goggles, went carefully over the wall, the concrete, looking for marks. Finding nothing, she went back inside, tried the yoga studio. She found a group in session, with people, mostly female, in colorful skin suits twisting into weird positions on colorful mats, all while facing a slim and stunning woman with a perfect body, impossibly perfect form, and a wall of mirrors. She had to give the group props just for showing up. Soft, tinkling music played under the instructor's soft, tinkling voice. Eve decided she'd probably want to wrap the woman's legs around her neck, tie her ankles in a knot, before the end of a single session. But that was just her. Eve stepped back, tried the adjoining dance studio. Another wall of mirrors, more music played low. But this time, the music had a fierce, hard beat, and the lone woman in the room covered the floor to it, feet flying, legs flashing, hips rocking. She executed 3 whipping spins, bounced into a one-handed handspring, and ended right on that beat with her arms thrown up, head back. She said, panting but enthusiastically, "Shit! Looked good to me." The woman, Black skin wet with sweat, grabbed a towel, swiped off as she studied Eve. Missed the count twice. Forgot the damn head roll. Sorry, are you looking for a class? No. Eve pulled out her badge. This time the woman said, uh-oh. Just a couple questions. Let's start with who you are. Donnie Shattery. It's my studio. I mean, I rent the space. Did you have classes yesterday? Every day, 7 days a week. My background indicates no classes yesterday between 3 and 5 p.m. That's right. Morning classes. 7 to 8, 8:30 to 9:30, 10 to 11, 11 to 12, break 12 to 1, 1 to 1:30 is sort of freestyle, then afternoon class from 1:30 to 2:30. Then, except for Fridays, I break until 5. You're the instructor? There are two of us. I had morning and afternoon yesterday. My partner had evening. Why? Not the place, Eve thought, with the schedule that tight. But I need to know if anyone was here or in the studio next door between 3 and 4 p.m. I was here. I've got a call back for a new musical today. I've been working on the damn routine every chance I get. I was here from about 6:30 yesterday morning until 5. What about the yoga studio? I know Sensa was here before 7, and she did her afternoon meditation about 3. At least she always does. I didn't actually look in. She's got two other instructors, and one of them, that's Paula, came in around 3 after the afternoon class because she's a dancer too, and she came over and watched me practice for a while. So, basically, someone was in that space all afternoon. Yeah. Did anyone else come in during that time frame? Not that I saw or heard. Should we be worried about something? I don't think so. Eve walked over to the windows. 7 days a week, she repeated. And someone's generally here, on the floor, in the afternoons. That's right. If we leave, we lock up. We have a sign. Sensa and I split the rent for the floor, and we share an excuse for an office and keep some stuff in here. Extra mats, some costumes. We co-teach a belly dancing class on this side twice a week. It's not much to steal, but we lock up. Was there a break-in? Eve scanned the space again. It just didn't fit. No, I don't think so. One more question. Why break a leg? How the hell can you dance if you break a leg? Sorry, Oh, the saying. Theater superstition. Saying good luck is bad luck, so you say break a leg when you mean good luck. That doesn't make any sense. Nope. Donnie gulped from a water bottle. But that's showbiz. 5. Eve covered an office building, a residential building. She felt one apartment in the residential might warrant a trip back, and certainly a full run on the tenant. Single man in his mid-30s who'd served in the army for 5 years. The quick run she did, while hoofing it to the next building, showed he'd served as a supply officer, minimal weapons training. But she marked him down to be interviewed either when he was in residence or at his place of employment. The ugly, incessant sleet began to thin, just a little, as she walked east from 3rd Avenue to 2nd. She hit a flop, a struggling art studio, more offices. Got no buzz at all. The hotel, her next stop on 2nd, looked old but well-kept. Low to mid-range. Family-friendly, according to its billing, with some rooms boasting a kitchenette. The lobby, quiet and small, held a skinny cafe, a closet-sized gift shop, and a single clerk at the desk. He smiled broadly. Good morning. Such a dreary day to be out and about. How can I help you? He had such a pleasant face, all round and cheerful, with a voice to match. Eve felt almost bad about pulling out her badge. He blinked at it. Oh, my. Is there something wrong, officer? No, excuse me. I see it's Lieutenant. Lieutenant! He repeated before she could speak. Of course it's Lieutenant Dallas. I loved the ICOV agenda, book and vid. I hope I can help one of the most dedicated public servants in the city. Me too. I'm looking for someone who would have had a room yesterday, most likely on the 9th or 10th floor facing west. A check-in yesterday. Not necessarily a check-in yesterday. Could have been prior, but they'd have been in-house yesterday. We'll start with guests, but I may be looking for one of the staff, someone who could gain access to an empty room. I see, I see. No, of course I don't see at all, but let me check the rooms. It's likely a male, likely alone, but don't rule out female or a companion. 9th floor, west. We have Mr. and Mrs. Ernest Hubble. They're here for 4 days, with a checkout tomorrow. You got a home address on them? Oh, yes, Des Moines. They're return guests. This is their 3rd visit. They come for the inventory sales and a show. Give me somebody who checked out this morning or late yesterday. All right, this is rather exciting. His pleasant face turned a little pink to prove it. We have Mr. Reed Bennett. Home address is Boulder, Colorado. I believe he's a salesman and here for meetings. He checked in 2 days ago, checked out this morning. Just about a half hour ago, actually. Call off housekeeping. I'm going to want to see his room. Who else you got? Ms. Emily Utz and Ms. Fry, ladies of a certain age, in from Pittsburgh, here for a little reunion with some classmates from college, class of 19. Probably not. Any others? Just one more. Mr. Philip Carson from East Washington, accompanied by his teenage son, or daughter. I'm not sure. It's so hard to tell at that age, isn't it? Especially when they're wearing one of those hoods and all bundled up. I see here they requested that specific room. A bell rang. Specific room. Had they stayed here before? I don't have that name in our database, but I did think Mr. Carson looked familiar. Do you remember their luggage? He closed his eyes, squeezed them, then popped them open. I do, because I started to call for Gino to assist them, but Mr. Carson said they didn't need a bellman. They had 2 rollies, 1 each, and the child had a backpack. Mr. Carson had a case, a large metal briefcase. When did they check out? Yesterday, though they were booked to stay through the night. They checked in about 5 the evening prior. I remember, as I was about to go off my shift. I'm not sure I saw them at all until they checked out about 3:30 yesterday. Mr. Carson said they had a family emergency. I need to see the room. Oh, my. Yes, yes, but I'm afraid it's been cleaned. I need to see it. Let me get Gino to cover the desk, and I'll take you up myself. Just one moment. He bustled. At least, that was the word that came to Eve's mind, moving quickly as a man in a bellman's navy uniform came out of a side room. I didn't get your name. Oh, I'm Henry. Henry Whipple. He actually looked like a Henry Whipple, Eve decided, as they stepped on the elevator together. One old enough that it required Henry to push a button for the 10th floor. Some guests enjoy the old-fashioned touches, he explained. Old-fashioned, she thought. Do your windows open? The guest rooms. They do, though not fully. Now we have privacy screens. Guests expect that. But again, some enjoy being able to open the window a few inches in pretty weather, or because they want to hear New York. Soundproofing? Some, yes, but not what you'd find in newer or more expensive hotels. We've been family-owned for 5 generations and have tried to keep our little home away from home affordable for visitors, especially families. Got it. When they stepped out on 10, Eve could hear the murmur of someone's entertainment screen. Not offensive, just the mutter of it through the door of the room. Still, room security wasn't pitiful, and the corridor itself was as clean as the rest of the building. She started to reach for her master, saw Whipple had his out, and let him unlock the room. Should I wait out here? Just inside, shut the door. The lights worked by switches, another old-fashioned touch. 2 beds, well-made with white duvets, crisply cased pillows, a good-sized dresser, a bathroom so clean she could smell the lemon scent from the cleanser, and a small but efficient kitchen area with a glass-fronted cabinet holding various drinks, another holding snack food. But the windows were what drew her across the room. She unlocked one, lifted it. 4, maybe 5 inches, she judged. Room enough. She pulled over one of the 2 chairs, sat, took out her field glasses. Fucking bingo. I just know it. She looked down at the carpet, on the thin side, but clean. Took out micro goggles, studied the windowsill, shook her head. I'd like to speak with whoever cleaned the room. That would be Tasha. Excuse me, Lieutenant. You're looking toward Central Park, aren't you? With binoculars. The media reports. This is about what happened yesterday. About those poor people on the skating rink. Keep it under your hat, Henry. Yes, yes, of course. But I believe I need to sit down for just a moment. My legs. Pale, he dropped into the 2nd chair. Don't go feigning on me. Pulling out her PPC, she did a run on Philip Carson, East Washington. No, I just need a moment. I've worked in hotels for 23 years. I've seen and heard and dealt with a great deal, as you might expect. But to think I may have... The person who did... But... He had a child. Maybe. Is this the guy? Patting his chest, Henry studied the image on screen. Oh, no. He was younger than this. How about this guy? No, not that young. I'm sorry. Elimination's good. And that eliminated the 2 Philip Carsons in East Washington who were under 80 and over 20. Housekeeping, Henry. He let out a long breath before pulling out a link, tapping a code. Tasha, I need you in 10:04 right away. If this room was used, I got really lucky. But luck can happen. Or I could be wrong. Do you have security feed from yesterday? I'm sorry, we don't have it at all. Another good reason to pick this location, she thought. Can you describe the man and the kid? Yes. Some of his color came back. I absolutely can do that. I'd be happy to do that. Okay, you're going to give me the basics in a minute. Then I'm going to have you work with a police artist. Can you come to Central? I just need to have someone come in to take my shift. How about I send the artist to you? Thank you. It would be helpful. You're helpful, Henry. I've got it, she said at the knock on the door. She opened it to a tiny blonde woman with enormous blue eyes. Tasha, this is Lieutenant Dallas. She needs to ask you about the guests who were in this room. And the room after they left it.
Okay. But I didn't actually see the guests. They had their privacy light on, so I didn't see them.
What can you tell me about the room after they checked out?
They were really neat. I could tell they'd used the kitchen, but they'd washed up after themselves. Most people don't. I still washed everything, Mr. Henry. And they used the honor bar, so I replaced everything.
The rug, over here by the window. Did you notice anything?
Now, it's funny you should ask. I could see they must have brought over the chairs and sat there by the window. You could see the, you know, dents in the rug. And there were a couple other dents. I think maybe they had like a little telescope and sat there looking at the city. People do that.
Oh, my, Henry murmured. Oh, my.
I vacuumed up really good, Mr. Henry.
I know you did, dear. The room is spotless, as always, when you turn one. What did you do with the trash? They must have left some trash.
Oh, that goes straight into the recycler.
Sheets, towels,
right to laundry.
I bet you scrubbed down the bathroom, every surface.
Oh, yes, ma'am. We sanitize.
Lieutenant, Eve corrected absently. You wipe down the dresser, the counters, nightstand?
Oh, sure. Clean and comfortable. It's hotel policy.
Light switches?
Sanitized.
Henry, I'm going to want sweepers, the crime scene unit, to go over the room, just in case. Thanks, she said to Tasha, opening the door to nudge her out. Okay, Henry. Eve pulled over the chair so she could sit across from him. What did these two look like? Every detail you can remember, including what they wore. Satisfied she'd squeezed everything she could out of him, Eve sent Henry on his way, pulled out her link. Hey! Peabody's face, pink-cheeked, filled the screen. Finished at the college. I'll write that up, but there's nothing so far. I'm on my way to the first building on First. Nothing on York I could find. That's because I found it on Second. Manhattan East Hotel, room 1004. Let Jenkinson and Reinecke know. You found the nest? Are you sure? Would I be calling you off otherwise? Head to Second, meet me here. Save the questions, Eve added, before Peabody could ask another. She ended transmission, ordered the sweepers, contacted Detective Yancey, the police artist, then tagged Lowenbaum. That's some luck you got, Dallas. You ought to be playing the horses. You're going to want to see this, Lowenbaum, and I'm going to want you to verify I'm not talking out of my ass when I say the right shooter could have made the strikes from here. I'm on my way. Bring the laser rifle you figure with you and a bipod. Already on the list. After shoving the link back in her pocket, Eve wandered the room. On the small side, she thought, but more than adequate. Had to scout the room at least once before. Alone, most likely. Not with a partner. Had to be sure it could be done, and this was the place to do it. Quiet hotel. No cams, but solid security on the guest room doors. Nobody's going to stroll in unexpectedly. Just a guy and his teenage kid traveling to New York. Who pays attention? Henry Whipple, she thought, and yeah, that was some luck. Booked the room. Bogus ID, but the card used to register has to pass hotel scan, so it's good bogus. Carry your own bags. Come up, lock the door, put on the privacy light, then... She kept walking through it as she moved to the door to answer the knock, let in a slightly out-of-breath Peabody. How did you... Front desk clerk who pays attention. Suspect was traveling with what Henry, front desk, believed was his minor child, teenage type. Not sure on gender. ID is bogus, but we'll push on it deeper. Philip Carson, East Washington, requested this room specifically. Eve pulled out her field glasses. Have a look. Peabody moved to the window, looked out.
Wow. It's a really long way, but yeah, it's a good view of the rink.
Housekeepers sanitized the works, but she noticed little dents in the carpet by the window, like a chair and a bipod would make.
If this is it, they had to have been here before, had to know they'd have the shot.
Henry thought the adult male looked familiar, and we've got a description. Yancey's heading in to work with him. Caucasian male, late 40s, early 50s, about 6 feet, on the thin side at about 160. Square jaw, short medium brown hair. Not sure on eye color, but Henry thinks light, blue, green, gray. And maybe he had a cold or was getting over something. He looked drawn, was the word, and his eyes looked tired. Wearing a black parka, black ski cap, jeans. Carrying a large metal briefcase and a mid-sized black rollie.
That's a lot. If Henry's accurate, that's a lot.
There's more. The younger suspect, mixed race, medium complexion. Henry claims beautiful skin there. Green eyes, black hair and short dreads, about 5'5", about 120. Dark green knee-length coat, green and black striped cap. He said no older than 16, but that may be the height, the build, and the assumption this was the adult suspect's offspring.
And if it is,
Peabody handed the field glasses back to Eve.
Well, Jesus.
We can't verify that yet. They booked this room, checked in early evening, carried their own bags up, locked the door, engaged the privacy light. They took some drinks and snacks. One of them might have gone out for food. No cams in this place. Or they might have brought in what they wanted. Housekeeper says they were neat, cleaned up after themselves.
Wipe the place down, you can bet.
You can bet, Eve agreed. But efficient housekeeping took care of that anyway. I have sweepers on the way in case, but I don't expect to find anything. They left about 10 minutes after the strikes, claiming family emergency, as they were booked through last night.
In case they missed the target, and to give them into the afternoon.
They also booked the room over a week ago. So that takes the third Vic out of target specific. Add this. They came in, set up. The rink was open, but they waited, spent the night, spent the morning, before making the strikes.
Okay, yeah, why not finish it? The rink's a popular spot at night, and well lit. People panic more at night, right? If that's the only motive, hit at night. But they spent hours in this room. It leans more toward one of the victims being a target.
Eat some snacks, maybe watch some screen. Sit there, looking through the scope, thinking about all the people you could end from your perch. The ones walking home, going out to dinner, riding in the back of a cab. They owe their lives to you. That makes you feel powerful. Walking back to the window, Eve looked out, hands in her pockets. They're alive because you allowed them to live. And they're all as clueless as ants on a hill. They don't know all you have to do is step on them. You spent a long time in the night sitting here, thinking about that, imagining, anticipating.
Which one?
The younger. Or if not the younger, it will be.
Why?
What's the point otherwise? Henry? He's solid, and he's got a sharp eye. I can buy the second suspect, maybe into the 20s, but no more than that. Henry wouldn't be that far off. And we'll see what Yancey has to say when they work together. So why have the young one along? It's not for the fucking company. There's a purpose. Here's how it's done, kid, And next time, it's yours to do. Or, it's your time. Take your shot. Hadn't that been the way between her and Feeney? Here's how it's done, kid. Now do it. Henry felt that father-child connection. Maybe that was because that's what they wanted to project, but that's often how it plays out with the trainer and a trainee, especially with that sort of age gap. It could go back to pros, Peabody suggested. The older pro training the younger, related or not. Yeah, it could, except when you look at the VIX. Just not enough to gain. Michelson was well set, but not swimming in it. His practice will go to his godson, and the godson was already coming into the practice. So far, I'm not finding any patients who'd want him dead. His ex is remarried, and they appear to have maintained civility. He had a good relationship with his daughter, who'd benefit financially, but doesn't have any outstanding debt or anything that shows. It doesn't feel like money.
Sex is always a good one.
Nothing to indicate he had any serious partners there. All that holds, as far as we know, for Wyman. So, we keep looking.
Yeah, I'm hitting the same on Wyman. Just no gain to killing her. Nobody disliked her, knew of anyone who did, or hit on her hard enough to have a thing.
Well, somebody had something on her or Michelson. Once again, Eve went to the door to answer the knock and let in Loewenbaum. He walked in, black coat wet with sleet, pulled off his ski cap.
I meant it about the horses.
Contemplatively chewing his gum, he scanned the room. He carted in a large, locked case.
The guy at the desk went white as a sheet when he saw this.
Setting the case on one of the beds, Loewenbaum tapped it. After I badged him, he told me the man who was in this room had one just like it.
Fucking bingo, Eve thought again.
I don't know the horses, but maybe I'll lay some on tonight's Knicks game.
Your man bought the Celtics, didn't he?
Yeah.
Chill.
Still scanning, Loewenbaum unlocked the case.
Decent room. Decent place. He could have gotten a flop a lot cheaper, done the job. Longer odds us nailing that location.
He wasn't alone. Now Loewenbaum looked up.
Is that so?
Younger, undetermined gender. Desk guy thought teenager, but we can't narrow it there yet.
Changes things.
Eve stepped closer as Loewenbaum opened the case and began, with quick, practiced efficiency, to assemble the weapon.
How much would that weigh? Case included.
A solid 15 with the extra batteries. He took out the bipod, tapped a button, telescoped it out.
First window right of the bed, Eve told him. The housekeeper saw the depressions left in the carpet from the bipod and from a chair.
You're shitting me now.
Truth, they're observant here at Manhattan East. And the window opens about 5 inches from the bottom.
Handy. After setting the bipod in front of the window, Loewenbaum retrieved the rifle, secured it.
Thanks, he said when Peabody brought over a chair.
He sat, looked through the scope, made some adjustments, walked the chair over a half inch.
Pick 'em off like flies, he murmured.
You could make the strikes from here?
Yeah, I could. I've got another 2 on my squad I'd count on to make it, and another 3 who'd at least wing the targets from here.
Moving targets, Eve reminded him.
I could. The 2 on my squad could.
Moving targets, let's give the other 3 a 50-50 at this range.
Take a look.
He got up from the chair. Eve took his place. The scope made her field glasses feel like a toy. She studied the empty rink, the barricades, made her own adjustments to widen the field, and watched gawkers taking photos of the rink. She put a woman with a blue pom-pom cap and scarf in the crosshairs. Powerful, she thought again. Makes me feel I could make the strike. But that's not factoring in wind, temps, and all that other crap. Could the younger guy have been here to do those calculations? You have a weapon like this, and you have the skill, you do your own. It's almost innate, and it's, you've got to say, intimate. You and the weapon, I mean. You and the target, that's not. Nodding, Eve rose. You'd verify this is the location? I would. But why not use the toys we've got to lock it down? He sat again, took out his PPC. I can plug in this location, the exact position of the weapon, the exact position of the targets, and do a reverse calculation. You can? I can now, because on my way in, I had a conversation with Rourke about doing that using this new program. I figured, why the hell not ask the guy who came up with the program, more advanced than we've been using, and give it a try? I should have thought of that. Then you wouldn't need me. Give me a sec. While she waited, Eve jerked a thumb at the door for Peabody to answer. If that's the sweepers, tell them we'll be ready for them in a minute. Have them hold. Another sec, Loewenbaum told her. It's a lot of tech for me. Your genius was heading into a meeting. Maybe he'll buy the Mets. Or I'd tag him again, see if he could do it by remote, but I think I can. Okay, there it goes. And we have a 95.6 probability on this location. He handed Eve his PPC so she could see the results. That'll be handy in court when we bag the bastards. He took the PPC back, put it away. My work is done here. I'd like to see these assholes. You're gonna shoot me the security feed. No cams in the place. And the lucky streak dies. But I've got a solid description, and Yancey's coming in to do sketches. And rides again. Give me the basics, he said, as he began to disassemble the weapon as efficiently as he'd assembled it. Caucasian male, she began, filling him in while he secured the weapon and the stand. I'll take a good look when you have the sketches. I know some guys who could make these strikes, either by face or rep, and some personally. Maybe it'll pop. Or I can show it to some I trust aren't asshole bastard lunatics. You'll have it when I do. Appreciate it, Loewenbaum. I'd say all in a daze, but not this time. I'll be seeing you. Keep it loose, Peabody. That's how I roll. Peabody let him out, let the sweepers in. Once Eve had given them the basics, she and Peabody left them to it. I'll keep digging on Alyssa Wyman. With it leaning this far, target-specific, the suspects could be in the wind, well into it. You think they're done? Eve countered. If they hit their target, why the partner, Peabody? Why the younger? Partner or, if we're really talking about at least 20 years age difference, maybe apprentice. What's the training for? Some connection between the suspects and one of the Vicks, there's got to be. But people have more than one connection. And people with this kind of grudge, they've got more than one of those, too. Eve stepped into the elevator, stabbed the button for lobby. They're not done. 6. Eve tried Mira from the car, hit her V-mail. Suspect has a partner, younger, possibly a teen, gender unknown. Full report to follow, but think about it.
She clicked off, tried Feeney next. "Peabody, tag the commander's office. I need 10 minutes. 15, she corrected, ASAP. "Feeney," she continued, when his Basset Hound face came on screen, "I'm on my way to Central. I need a meet."
"On the LDSK?"
"Got the nest, got a description. I want to bounce this off you."
"Come ahead and bounce. I'll work you in."
"Appreciate it. Later."
"The commander's on a link conference, but I stress the urgency. He can see you in about 40.
"That works. You head back to the bullpen, brief Jenkinson and Reinecke. I may need to pull them in again. I'll send you my report on the interviews at the hotel. Start writing the report. If I'm not back, go deeper on the ID the suspect used. There may be a reason he used that name. Dig under the credit card."
"I've got it."
"Why Feeney?"
"He was in the Urbans, and he's worked LDSKs before.
And, Eve thought, he trained me." When she hit a traffic snag, somebody had wiped out on the slippery street and was now arguing heatedly with a cab driver he'd slid into, she thought, "Fuck it." Slapped on the sirens and went in hot.
"Call that mess in before there's bloodshed."
"Already done." As she turned toward Central, Eve glanced over. She'd trained Peabody. Something else to think about. She squealed into a parking spot in Central's garage, quick step to the elevator.
"You think another strike's coming," Peabody said. "That's why the rush."
"I think another strike's coming, and if I'm wrong on that, they've had a day to poof. We need to catch up." As the elevator filled with cops, she hopped off when Peabody did, took the glide the rest of the way up to EDD. Entering the odd cop world of color and movement, she spotted McNabb, hard to miss in a fluorescent red and yellow shirt flopping over neon green baggies as he stood, skinny hips, tick-tocking to his own strange beat. His screen was exploding with color and weird symbols. She dodged around a female, practically skipping across the room, wearing a fuzzy pink sweater with an animated poodle doing backflips over her chest. Eve beelined for the relative sanity of Feeney's office. He stood working a large swipe screen two-handed. His hips didn't bop, thank Christ, and he wore one of his shit-brown suits, already wrinkled, a darker shit-brown tie askew over a saggy beige shirt. His silver-threaded ginger hair sproinged up from his comfortably worn face as if he'd scrubbed it with a wire brush. The room smelled of his candied almonds and coffee. When he grunted at her, she stepped in.
"Can I close this door? All that color makes me dizzy."
He signaled her to go ahead and, when the door shut, wagged a thumb toward his auto chef.
"Coffee's under kale and carrot smoothie."
"Good choice." Eve programmed too, waited until Feeney nodded at the screen and stepped back.
"What you got, kid?"
"The nest. A description. He made those strikes from Second Avenue, Feeney." Eyebrows lifted. He let out a whistle as he dropped behind his desk.
"That's some juice."
"He's got a partner, except the second suspect is young, undetermined gender, possibly a teenager. I'll know more when Yancey finishes with a wit. Adult suspect, probably early 50s.
"Doesn't sound like a partner."
"Exactly. Sounds like a trainee. Maybe the wit's off, but he comes off rock solid. When he says 16 tops, I lean toward a kid. Who takes a kid into something like this unless he's molding said kid?" As he thought about it, Feeney snagged a few almonds out of a lopsided bowl.
"Any chance the kid's a hostage?"
"Doesn't feel like it. This wit,
He'd have noticed if the kid came in under duress. They checked into the hotel together, had already requested that particular room. Stayed the night, stayed through the morning. That's planning and practice. And it's lying in wait, so I ask myself, why this kid? You took me. Sipping coffee, Feeney nodded.
You had juice.
I was green.
You never had much green on you.
I saw potential, guts, a working brain, cop's brain. Maybe a little bit of me there back in the day. And you wanted homicide.
You took Peabody, he reminded her.
Yeah, and thinking on that, I can't say I saw any me in her, but I saw potential and that working cop brain. I figured give her a shot at homicide because she wanted it and try her out as my aide. Then it fit, that's all.
We fit.
She's got you in her. A sunnier outlook and that free ager base, but she doesn't quit. And it's not just the job matters, it's the victim. You saw some of that, or you might have put her into a Cuban homicide. You wouldn't have set yourself up to train her.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. So there's maybe some of the adult in the kid. The potential to kill. You took me, I took Peabody. And I gave Baxter Trueheart. But there's more than the potential. All three trainees were already cops. With a nod, Feeney gulped some coffee.
You're wondering if the kid's already a killer.
You don't pick an apprentice out of the air. You don't take them on because they're handy. Where'd they find each other? The adult suspect has to have police or military training, almost has to have been in uniform. So, do you pick this kid off the street, out of some war zone?
There's another choice.
I know it. They're related. Father and son, uncle, older brother, distant frickin' cousins. I get the description, I can run it through missing persons, see if anyone's looking for a teenager. Let's say they're connected. Why train to kill? This doesn't come off as a pro. None of the three victims had anything worth the hire. And there are a lot less visible ways to do a training exercise if you're heading up a freaking assassin school. This comes off personal.
A lot easier ways to kill for personal reasons.
Damn right.
Unless this is what you do.
Companionably, Feeney nudged the wobbly bowl toward her. Not an assassin for hire, but a sniper, police or military. That's where you're leaning anyway. On a long breath, Eve nodded. It helped to have him lean where she did.
Yeah, that's where.
You take on the trainee because you want him to share what you do. You want to give him something, maybe. You want to see something of you in him. The age difference,
more like you and me.
Feeney nodded. I never worked an LDSK with a partner or with the trainee. But I'd say the trainee has to show a, propensity for the work and some skill and the same cold blood. You can't teach the cold blood, Dallas. It's just gotta be there. And again, it helped to hear him say what muttered in her mind. How'd they pick and train snipers during the Urbans?
Same way they do now, I'd say. You've got to have the skill, the control. You have to be able to see a human being as a target. You don't take that target until you get the green, and when you do get the green, you don't hesitate.
Whoever made those strikes didn't hesitate, Eve said, and they won't hesitate when they get the green again. Working out the oral report in her head, Eve headed to Commander Whitney's office. Whitney's admin gave her a nod, held up one finger to signal for her to wait, then tapped her ear link.
Lieutenant Dallas, Commander.
Yes, sir.
Go right in, Lieutenant.
He sat behind his desk, a big man with broad shoulders that carried the weight of command. His wide, dark face was set in sober lines as he watched Eve come in.
I've kept you out of this morning's media conference, as you are in the field. Tell me you have something.
I have the nest. I have a description of two suspects, and Detective Yancey is working with the witness.
Whitney sat back.
That's more than something. Details.
She gave them all, quickly, to the point, and on her feet.
A teenage apprentice, Whitney murmured. It wouldn't be the first time. The DC snipers, he told her. Early 21st century. The Ozark sniper.